Welcome to the SysAdmin Show, the podcast that explains everything sysadmins do and the technology they work with. I am your host, Dustin Ribrick, here to give a jumpstart to your IT career. Today's show is episode 25, Resumes and Interviews. Well, welcome back, everybody. It's great to be here. And today, I want to start with a off-topic plug. I've mentioned in the past that I have had some fitness goals and doing some stuff relating to fitness, and wanted to throw out there anybody who may be interested in achieving some fitness goals of their own to check out my wife's Instagram. She is a Beachbody coach, and she's been doing it for just about a year now, and she's really, it's really changed our lives, this fitness program that they put on. They have a lot of stuff there, Beachbody, but the fitness videos and the programs that they put on and the community around it is amazing. So again, shameless plug for my wife. You can find her. Her username is H Raybrook on Instagram. That's HReyBrouck on Instagram. I hope that helps some of you if that's something you're looking for. So with that out of the way, I want to get right into today's topic. And I want to talk all about resumes and the interviewing process. So let's start with resumes. A resume is something that everybody should have, even if you're not currently interviewing or looking for a job. And this is basically a documentation, right? Some documentation of your career highlights, your education highlights. And the best way to do that is to keep it going, you know, keep adding to it over time as you progress through your education and your career. So having a high quality resume is going to help you stand out in the pile of other equally qualified candidates. In addition to the resume, a cover letter is going to make you stand out even more. Now, a lot of people don't even consider doing a cover letter. And I don't care what level of position you're applying for. If it's entry level, if you're right out of college, right? If it's a more senior executive position, you're being headhunted and you're still providing your resume after you've been headhunted, that cover letter is your chance to stand out and to show that you are a serious candidate and that you're proactive, that you're taking that extra initiative. Now, why don't many people do cover letters or at least do them well? Because it takes extra effort. And a lot of times, especially when you're applying for tens of jobs, if you're in the middle of a job hunt, it is a lot of extra work. Honestly, people tend to be a little bit lazy when it comes to that. And they don't see a direct correlation between this extra effort and getting the job that they want. But I can assure you that correlation is real, that is there, and a cover letter is going to make a big difference. We actually just went through a hiring process recently. The person we ended up hiring had a cover letter. I believe almost none of the other candidates did, and that cover letter stood out and made a big difference in getting that this person in for an interview, which then, you know, gets you a better chance of getting the position. So let's not jump ahead to interviewing yet. Getting ahead of myself. So how are we going to put this resume and cover letter together? All right. First of all, we need to do some research. And your resume should be specific to the position you want and the company that would be hiring you, the company you're applying to. And this is, again, more work. This means that you're going to have to take that kind of generic resume that you have, and if you're applying for a couple different kinds of positions at a couple different companies, you're going to have to customize that, change some of the language in there so that it speaks directly to the position that you want to be hired for. And not all the time, but a lot of the time, companies will put out a fairly substantial requirements list, right? They're kind of job posting, and that's will help you narrow down what you want to have on your resume. Now, the cover letter really has to be spoken from why you want the job. And if you jump on the company's website, and maybe if they have a Wikipedia page or any other research you can find on them, talk to friends or family that maybe work there and learn what the company's core business is and maybe some of the problems that they're having, and talk about how you want to help them solve it. And talk about them, right? Don't talk about what can you do for me. Talk about here's what I can do for you. That's going to make you stand out. All right. Any job postings that you find for similar roles at other companies, look at those requirements and see how you line up with those, and if there are strengths that you have, work that into your resume in such a way that you're not padding your resume, you're not claiming things that you don't know or can't do, but that you're bringing attention to the things that this role, the role that you want to be hired for, is typically known for. Look at the experience people in that role on LinkedIn have. LinkedIn is awesome. It's a great way to network, and it's actually a pretty great way to find a job as well, reaching out to people and getting an in at a company through LinkedIn. I actually recently went through a job hunting class just to learn more about it. And it was all about, a big section of it was about how to get hired through LinkedIn. And it's pretty cool. The other cool thing about LinkedIn is a lot of people's experience, their, you know, where they work, the position that they have, their title, and a lot of their experience is all listed there if you're friends with them. So the more people that you can get in your network, the more people, the more that you'll have access to see who they are, what they do, and what qualifications they have. And if you're looking especially to break into a new area like IT or a certain type of IT, and you're not sure exactly what you need yet or what people in the area have for qualifications, check out some people on LinkedIn. It's a great way to see what's expected. The next bit of research that you're going to want to do is, what should resumes look like? This is pretty straightforward. Ultimately, I want you to look at a lot of resumes, you know, do some research online and see what some examples are. I know that Microsoft Word and maybe some other programs, maybe on the Mac, I'm not positive, have kind of the built-in template. That's not what you want to do. You want to go out and find real world templates or examples of resumes, and don't copy them exactly, but use them as a guideline and then write your own. And also, I want you to consider, should you get a professionally written resume? That is something that's probably going to cost you a couple $100s, but it will possibly, again, help you stand out. And if you're in a situation where it could either help you get the job, or if it could help you get a higher paying tier at the job, that $200 or $150 or whatever it is up front could make a huge difference in your life. So I know some people may be hesitant to pay for something like that, but it can make a difference. And then also spend some time researching what information should be included or avoided, right? What are the must-haves, right? What experience do I need to have on there? How much college should I show? Should I show high school if I've been out of college or out of high school for more than 10 years? Or is that still relevant, right? If I did some college, but then switched degrees and then did some more at a different school, should all that be in there, right? How many of my past string of 6 jobs should I have, right? I had a job that only lasted 3 months, and then I got another one because that one didn't work out, or for whatever reason. Should I omit that, or should I have it in there? Any of those kinds of questions, you should be typing them into Google and getting, you know, looking up articles and finding what people say about this kind of stuff. You want to make sure that you, right, have all of the items that are normally expected from a resume, And definitely don't put in too much information. Don't put in anything that isn't normally expected, and you should be good to go. Ultimately, you want this thing to be as informative, but also as concise as possible, because you want to stand out, but you also don't want to be looked over because it's just too wordy. There's too much going on and they can't find the point, or they can't see who you are through all the details that you've put in there. The next thing you're going to want to do once you've done all that research and kind of built your first copy is now have somebody proofread it, because you can't really proofread your own stuff. So you've got to have somebody else with fresh eyes look at this thing, and they can give you an honest assessment. If you have somebody, again, friends or family, who are a manager, right, or in a hiring position, in a even if it's a completely unrelated field, see if you can get it in front of them, because they look at resumes all the time and they're going to be able to point out some of those things that we were talking about above of, oh, you definitely shouldn't, you know, where is this? You're missing this piece of information, or why did you put this in here? You know, they don't need to know this. It's not a big deal. Don't put it in there. It's just going to confuse them. Again, we're not trying to amp ourselves up. We're not trying to hide anything, but we want to streamline this thing. All right, next is look at example job postings, right? I think I kind of mentioned that ahead of time. Anytime you're looking to get into a certain position, you want to look at as many job postings for that kind of position as possible. So then you can make sure that you're not only well rounding out your resume, but also your skills, if any adjustments are needed, if you have time to try to get some additional skills to add to your resume. All right. My hope, I don't know if this is actually going to come to fruition yet. My hope is to get a resume example and a cover letter example, just a basic, you know, kind of template up on my on the website, so that you guys can see those and get some benefits from that. So I do not have those completed yet, but, and I may not by the end of the, when I post this episode, but I will do my best to put them out there. And once I get them up, if not by the end of this episode, I'll make a note in a future episode that they're available. The other thing in the resume and an application, this is typically for more of an entry-level position, if you like McDonald's, right? If you're filling out the application, what you don't want to do is mention salary. So if you're filling out an application, and other than just kind of a very entry-level job, I would, but especially for more of a career where you're, you know, you're looking to make in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, right, and above, do not mention salary and on the resume. And if there's a spot for whatever reason and you're filling out some sort of canned application and it asks, don't fill that part out. You are not required in any way, and this kind of gets into more interviewing process, but there's no requirement to mention what you're making now. And a lot of times that's asked. It is a mistake, and we'll talk about that more in the interviewing process. So avoid talking about salary or mentioning your salary requirements in any application or resume. And we'll talk about that more in just a second. All right, so that's the resume. Now let's talk about interviewing. So if the resume does its job, if the cover letter does its job, it's going to get you an interview. That's its main job, is to get you the interview. Once you have the interview on the books, you've got more prep work to do. And now you, in person or on the phone, right? That's becoming more popular for entry, you know, kind of intro or first round interviews, is now you need to stand on your own and show them that what you put on that resume is true. And here's what we got to do. First, let's start out by how we look. And what you need to do is dress as best as you are able. And some people just don't have the availability to wear a suit and tie. But if you do, I prefer it. I'm not sure exactly what the female version of a suit and tie is, you know, like a nice business dress or skirt and a nice blouse, right? That's what you want to do. You want to wear the best clothes that you can wear, very professional, not cocktail dinner. So not a tux, right? A suit. You want to wear business clothes. And even if the dress code for the position you're applying for is relaxed, which a lot of IT positions now, one of the perks is that they're relaxed, right? You can wear jeans and a t-shirt or shorts and flip-flops, whatever. Especially my buddy just got hired for a pretty high level position as a HTML, you know, front end developer. And he's wearing jeans and shorts and khakis and t-shirts and polos, right? Kind of, that's the dress code. He can wear whatever he wants. Even if that's the case, during the interview is different. You want to look as professional for the interview as possible because you want to show that you're taking this seriously. Dress as best as you are able to. You also want to be ready to explain and expand on every aspect of your resume. So as you're filling out your resume, all that, all those facts and examples and qualifications that you're putting in there, you need to know what's on there without reading it. And you need to be ready to talk about it from memory without, you know, having any notes in front of you. Or one thing that's good is to practice answering common interview questions. These are easy to find. You can search around on Google and find several different lists of common interview questions. And then not only practice answering them yourself, but also, you know, have somebody interview, you know, practice the process of interviewing you and asking you questions and you're answering out loud. That will help you get used to the process. Have some questions that you want to ask them, typically towards the end of an interview, but sometimes in the beginning or, you know, sometime throughout there, they will say, "Do you have any questions for us?" And you do not want the answer to be no, because that shows lack of interest, lack of preparation. You want to have some questions prepped, and they should be not only just general questions that you could ask any place where you're going to work, but they should be specific to the organization that you're looking to be hired with. So again, do some research, find out some information about the kind of work that they do and the kind of team that you might be on, and ask some specific questions about how that's going to work and show that you did some research and that you're interested. This is going to show general interest and preparation. And it's also important to think of an interview as a 360 degree interview. You're definitely not asking them as many questions as they're asking you, but it's important to, at the end of the interview, to find out, is this a place where you want to work? And that's actually one of my favorite things to ask somebody who I'm interviewing is, so, now that the, we're kind of winding up the interview here, one of my final questions for you is this a job that you still want? And you'd be surprised how people can waffle at that answer, because sometimes they're not sure they still want the job. And I'd rather know that up front and say, if you're not excited about the possibility of working on this team, then I don't want you on the team, because you're not gonna, we're not gonna all work well together if we're not all excited and passionate about the work that needs to be done. All right. It's okay to bring a notepad and pen. Take notes, right? That also shows that you're kind of prepared and you're actively engaged. Do not read from any of the notes that you take. Do not bring any notes to go over. And it's okay, again, and probably a good idea, to bring a copy or several copies of your resume and cover letter to hand out to anybody who you may be interviewing with. But do not plan on reading off your resume to answer any questions about your experience or qualifications, right? Have all that memorized. That's just going to make you come across in the best light. Practice making eye contact, but occasionally looking away. This is kind of something that takes some practice, especially when you're in a formal setting, like an interview. It's sometimes hard to make the appropriate amount of eye contact. Sometimes You feel like you're making too much eye contact. So, you know, grab a friend and practice and see what feels, you know, what feels natural. And don't be afraid to, you know, look away every once in a while, but also don't be afraid to make eye contact, especially when you're talking to a specific person or when you're making a specific point. And then take some breaks and look away. That's going to make you come across more confident. That's important. All right. Ultimately, it's okay to be nervous. It's actually expected. You know, when you're in an interview, a lot of times it's expected that the person being interviewed is going to be nervous. Sometimes there's it's one-on-one where you're just with one other person. Sometimes you could be with two or three or even, you know, a room full of other people and all eyes are on you. And that can make you, you know, very uncomfortable. So you can go ahead and admit it and just say, hey, you know, hope it's okay. I'm just a little bit nervous, you know, and don't try to hide it because no one's expecting you to be completely cool, right? But if you are extremely nervous, then it's going to be, it could become a problem. You know, you don't want it to hold you up where you're kind of like the deer in the headlights, right? Where you can't even remember your facts and you're kind of fumbling over, you know, any of the questions. So if that's likely to be you, then you've got to practice. And promise me, the more that you practice, you might still be nervous, but the better you will perform in those conditions. Because at some point, it just becomes, oh, I've done this so many times that I can almost do this in my sleep. And so that might mean that you have to practice a lot of times to get to that, you know, to that level of where you can perform, especially if you have, you know, high anxiety in stressful situations. So just, you know, rehearse your material, practice in front of the mirror, practice with a friend, you know, get as much information as you can, and you will do fine. All right, back to the salary and compensation conversation. So if questioned during the interview on what your salary requirements are, you should respond that you're open to any reasonable offers, right? Or any kind of take on that statement. You do not want to give a number. And this basically becomes a situation where the person who speaks first tends to do the worst. And first of all, when you don't have a offer in front of you, it's dangerous to talk numbers because they're trying to qualify, right? If you're a good candidate based on how much they can pay you and if they can get you for a deal, right? Versus your actual qualifications. And you, as somebody looking for a job, should be open to, right, the market rate, a reasonable competitive rate for the job that you're looking to do. So you should not be looking for an extreme amount of compensation, and they should not be trying to undercut, you know, get somebody at a super bargain, right? As long as everyone's on the same page about that, then there's no reason to talk about money until an offer is actually being made. And so if they continue to push the question about, well, you know, I'd really like to get a number from you, and you're like, you don't want to be argumentative, right? But you want to make it clear that, you know, if you guys are willing, you know, you guys are talking about making me an offer, then we can start talking about money. But as of right now, right, if there's not an offer on the table, then I can't talk about money, because you want to save all the negotiating for after you've been offered a job. Because at that point, something changes, right, inside the management team where they've decided they want you. And that means that you can start talking about some different things that you want, because you've already met the requirements for what they want. And it's important to make sure that you're ticking off the list, you know, and checking on what they want before you start talking about what you want. Because somebody comes in and they say, oh, am I going to get my own office? And can I work from home? And, you know, how much PTO do I get? You start to think, wow, this person's pretty, you know, needy. I don't know if I want them on my team, right? You don't want to come across that way. Wait as long as possible. And it should be after you've been offered a job formally. The proper way to be offered a job is with an offer letter in writing that has the details spelled out, right? That's how you know you've been offered a job. If it's a verbal thing, it's not my favorite. I would request, can I get this in writing? Because especially if you already have a job and you then have to make decisions about where you're going to live and, right, maybe you have to move and putting in notice and this is your life and you deserve to have that taken seriously. All right, so let's talk about the negotiations. First and foremost, their salary. And again, to find out what you should be expecting and then, you know, negotiating towards as far as salary, you should be looking at what people in your regional area, right, your town, are making for the job requirements, the job role that you're looking to be doing. And you can find that on a bunch of different job sites like Glassdoor. I think actually LinkedIn shows compensation rates now for different job postings, kind of generic rate ranges. If you know anybody in the industry, kind of get some ballparks from them and ask them, hey, you know, what does this kind of job pay? If you're just graduating out of either a certification or a college course, ask the professors or the teachers or, you know, anybody in at the school there that maybe has some insight into it. Typically, the salary ranges that are listed for the degree program are completely inaccurate. So I would not base it on that. Especially starting out, they're typically pretty inflated. A lot of times you actually need some experience on top of the education to get the numbers that they're talking about. But I've seen it happen. All right. The next thing you might want to negotiate is a bonus, right? First of all, do you guys offer bonuses? If you do, you know, would my position qualify? What kind of bonus is it, right? Is it a performance-based bonus? Is it just a company bonus, right? So is it based on my performance, my team's performance, the company's performance, where if the company hits a certain sales goal or whatever, then we all just get some amount, right? Is it like a Christmas bonus where, you know, we all just get a gift card for the holidays? And PTO, right? Paid time off. Companies do this a lot. In a lot of different ways. Sometimes you just get a certain amount of weeks or days of PTO and it's for healthy days and sick days and they're all treated the same. Sometimes you get so many sick days a year and they can only be used if you're sick, and you get so many, you know, just vacation days and you can probably take them, you know, use them if you're sick or healthy. And you want to talk about that and find out what that's going to be, because that's part of your compensation. And if you end up in a situation where you're deciding between offers from multiple companies, a cool place to be, right? Negotiating for extra PTO, again, once you've been offered the job, because asking for the ability to work less kind of seems weird, right? But once you've been offered a job, it's not so weird to ask for this. More or less everything else is kind of a wash, and they, you know, no one's willing to budge on salary. Then if you can get an extra week of PTO from one place versus the other, then that's a pretty good deal. You know, why not go for that? All right. 401k, 401k match, right? What do they offer? Do they offer, you know, matching up to a certain amount? Is there a cap on that? That kind of stuff, because that's going to be a big difference in retirement if you end up staying at this place for a while. Health insurance, how much of that is going to come out of your paycheck? How much do they cover? And understanding that, because health insurance actually ends up being a big, you know, can be a big expense out of your paycheck. And if you're making $5,000 more at one company versus the other, but the company who's paying you less is covering more of your healthcare costs, it could actually be more of a wash because healthcare could easily end up costing you $5,000 a year if the company doesn't have great coverage and isn't chipping in a lot for it. Retirement, again, talked about that with 401k, and then perks, right? Are there any kind of perks that would make one job stand out? Some perks would be flexible, like flexible schedule, flexible hours, the ability to work part-time if needed, and the ability to work from home or remotely if needed, or maybe work from home is just an option. Some companies are doing that now where they don't even have an office or they don't necessarily need you to come into the office and you could do it all from home, and, you know, beat the traffic and spend more time with your family. Is a company car an option? That could be a perk, and that saves you from having to operate and maintain your own vehicle. If that's the case, right? Maybe there's a lot of travel involved and that's something that is interesting to you. And so there's an expense account, and that means that you can get so many, you know, meals out and maybe some entertainment when you're traveling. That would be a perk. Factor those things in. It really depends on what you want. All right. Ultimately, all these things add up to what's called total compensation, right? So you add up all, I mean, you can really add up your salary plus what any kind of bonus option is, plus what the value of your PTO is, plus, right, what kind of value the match in the 401k is, plus the value that you're getting from the health insurance and the value any perks would bring. You can add all that up and you get a total compensation. And when you're looking between multiple offers, you want to compare total compensation. That's going to show you which one's giving you the best, you know, compensation. It does not mean that's where you ultimately need to work. You want to take that into consideration and then consider other things. What kind of work will you be doing? How did you get a feel for the company culture? What's the size of the organization, right? Do you want to work for a big, you know, 10, 20, 30,000 person organization or bigger, right? Like a Microsoft? Or would you rather work for somebody that is a smaller company and has, you know, less than 1,000 people or 50 people, and maybe even a startup if that's something you're thinking about, because there's an opportunity for you to get some sort of, if they do an IPO and you can get some shares. And so you put in some time and energy now when they're small, and if they win, you win. That's a possibility. One thing, after all that negotiating's done and you get the job, right? But one thing to keep in mind, and I've just seen people do this time and time again, because for some reason, I guess because we need a job, right? We need to start making money. Sometimes we can get a little desperate, I guess, right, is the word. Or we can get a little, we kind of give in and think, you know what, this isn't exactly what I want right now, but, you know, once I prove myself, they're going to see my value and they're going to adjust my value, you know, my salary, my compensation, because they're going to see how good I am. That's a good way to make yourself upset with a company when they didn't do anything wrong. So unless specifically outlined in the offer, unless this is something that's negotiated, like a performance-based, you know, increase after 6 months or something like that, don't expect a large performance-based increase after you prove yourself, right? People, when a manager hires you for a specific role, and maybe you're thinking that you need to prove yourself, so you're willing to accept a smaller compensation package up front, and then thinking that you're going to move up the ladder, that's not what they're thinking. They're thinking, this person has this much experience, they're willing to accept this offer, this is what I'm going to pay them, and then I'm going to be paying them this, you know, and maybe with some basic cost of living, you know, like a 3% or 4% or whatever, increases going forward. But since they're, unless their role changes, unless their responsibilities change and they get a promotion, they're not doing anything different. So I shouldn't have to pay them anything different, right? And that's not wrong. That's the deal you signed up for. You signed up for a job making a certain amount of money to do a certain task. Somehow, I've seen people get into a situation where they think, you know, maybe they're just not super confident in their abilities, but they're willing, you know, they're confident they can figure it out. That lack of confidence turns into, I'm willing to accept less compensation until I prove myself. And I really don't want you to get yourself in a situation where you've done that and now you're expecting them to compensate you additionally, because now you can, you know, you're doing the job you were hired for successfully. Well, that's what the original compensation was for. And if you're thinking along those lines, then say it, you know, make that part of your negotiations and say, hey, you know what? I know that, you know, I don't have as much experience as some other people you may be interviewing. And in order to, you know, compensate for that, I'm willing to operate, you know, to work for you for the first 6 months, you know, for $5,000 less per year. And if I'm meeting your expectations, and here, you know, let's lay out some guidelines. If I'm, you know, if I have these deliverables or whatever it is, right? If I'm meeting these expectations and something that's measurable, then I will get that $5,000 or $10,000 raise after 6 months. That'll save you a little bit of confusion, you know, and unnecessary anguish later on. Well, that's today's show. As always, I want to hear from you guys. Questions about your education, career, technology, any ideas for future episodes, or feedback on this or previous episodes, you can send me emails, Dustin@sysadminshow.com. You can follow me on Twitter @sysadminshow. And until next time, I encourage you to never stop learning.